You're listening to the Useful Science Podcast, produced in collaboration with the Morehead Planetarium and Science Center. This week, we're talking about pandemic parenting. Useful Science is a website where we post one-sentence summaries of scientific research relevant to your everyday life. On this podcast, we've gone a rotating panel of our science contributors to pick out a few items from the Useful Science archives and dive deep into them. So while the website gives you the short, tweetable version of scientific research, our goal here is to give you the full story. Let's meet our hosts for this week.
Hi, I'm Jamie K. Devine. I have a PhD in neuroscience from Brandeis University. I am an operational fatigue scientist at the Institute for Behavior Resources in Baltimore, Maryland. Means I make sure that people aren't so tired on their jobs that they fall asleep and cause a safety risk.
My name is Michael Galtis. I'm a PhD chemist at the University of Liverpool, and my job is to develop new materials that are useful to society.
My name is Cindy Hovington. I have a PhD in neuroscience from McGill University here in Montreal, and I'm a mom of three and the founder of Curious Neuron, which offers parents parenting advice that is backed by science.
My name is Cameron Spencer. I'm not a scientist. I'm a web designer and web developer, and I work on the Useful Science website. So this is sort of the part two of our kind of two-part series on parenting related to science. So last week, you heard our episode on what it's like being a working a mother and a working scientist, or a father and a working scientist, or an academic. And then today we're talking about the challenges, I guess, of parenting during the coronavirus pandemic. So Jamie, can you sort of introduce us a little bit to what we're going to be talking about today?
Sure. I know everyone's concerned about COVID, and a lot of times we're focused on the actual disease, but we are all pretty sick of being stuck at home or having to put on face masks and all of that stuff. And as much as we think of that being an adult problem, this is having impacts on our kids as well. So kids can't socialize with their friends as much as they used to. They can't go to school the way they used to. So we're going to discuss how the COVID pandemic and the lockdowns and precautions to keep people safe and keep them healthy might be impacting children's mental health, physical health, and well-being in ways that are unrelated to whether or not they get the disease.
Exactly. And I think we talk about parenting because we always talk about, taking care of ourselves even before this pandemic. And this is where we are not able to take care of ourselves. We are, like you said, home all the time and working and home with our kids and having to balance this new kind of life now with everything. And unfortunately, a lot of the stress that we are feeling as parents is trickling down to our kids as well.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of times the advice is to seek out help. Mm. And that's just not an option at the moment.
Yeah.
So before we go on, maybe it'll help our listeners just to hear the ages of our kids. So Cindy, why don't you start? You said you have three kids.
Yeah, I have a 17-month-old son, a 3-year-old son, and a 5-year-old daughter.
I've got an 8-month-old little daughter.
Okay. And I have a 4-year-old son and nearly year-old daughter. And I'm not sure. Can you guys hear him in the background?
Yes, it's super good. Yes.
I wasn't sure. He's doing Zoom story time with my mother right now.
Oh, so, isn't COVID great?
Well, it's... this is a good example of how you can get around some of this stuff. So very early on in the pandemic, he was 3 at the time. He was just on the verge of making friends, just on the verge of understanding what the world is like. And then it was all ripped away from him. And my mom was also, she had her whole very social life ripped away from her. So we started doing Zoom story time. And my mom is a retired teacher. So in this past year, even though my son's been trapped at home and he did, experience a lot of emotional problems right in the beginning, having a personal tutor who loves you more than probably anyone in the world could, a grandma, he's reading, he's doing like math and stuff like that. She wow. quizzes him on things. So as dire as the situation seems, that has been one area where it's like this, that worked.
at the beginning of the pandemic, I was getting some emails from parents asking, you know, how to help a child, especially a young child around that age, 2 to 4 years old, to FaceTime, because they weren't sitting down the same way that we do to FaceTime with somebody saying, hi, how are you? How was your day? They were running around the house, showing them all their toys and their room and their, you know, their bookcase and the wall and the staircase. And parents were wondering, like, how do I help guide them? But in the end, that's how our child is socializing at that time. And whether they're able to sit down and listen to a story, I think there was a wide range of how kids were learning to re-socialize or learn how to navigate this new world of speaking with their grandparents on FaceTime or Zoom. No, so all three of mine are home. My five-year-old was supposed to start school this year, but I decided to homeschool. So for me, it's a little bit different. I had to figure out how to follow a 16 or 17-month-old baby around the house because all he wants to do is walk around and climb, but also teach my daughter. But the thing is we seem to have this idea that homeschooling means that they're sitting at their desk the same amount of hours as they would in a school, but they're not. The learning itself has been really fun because, you know, it's about learning even in odd numbers when we're out for a walk and looking at, you know, house addresses, or learning about oxygen because we're out for a walk again and we're seeing a tree and we're talking about, you know, why do we have trees? What's happening with why, you know, what does it offer us and what's in the air? What is it composed of? So learning a lot of science just through cooking with her and baking and taking walks. So it's not about sitting at the desk for hours and hours on end. I would say she sits down maybe half an hour to 45 minutes a day. Not even all at the same time. And that's when she, you know, practices, you know, her letters and her spelling and her reading and writing. But besides that, everything is really on the move, which is fun.
Do you think that this is a long-term plan to homeschool, or is just something to get through the pandemic?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I had never anticipated homeschooling. However, deep inside, I wanted to, because what I do with Curious Neuron is I talk about education and learning and character skills and offer parents ways to do this through play. So I was able to apply everything that I've been teaching parents for a few years, and that's been fun. I mean, I did it for preschool. She was home with me, but now the whole... you know, learning how to read and write has been just so interesting to see her develop these skills. And besides that, all these character skills that teachers might not have time to do in school, but, you know, being that resilience or being able, you know, when your tower of blocks falls down and then your child just gets really upset, like taking the time to build those kinds of skills where you have to, okay, let's replan this, you know, let's see what we can do to the tower to make it stronger and taller. And so those are skills that we can work on from home, which I really enjoy doing. But I don't know, maybe.
Just as a plug for Cindy's site, Curious Neuron, they have a lot of stuff there for younger infants as well. So there's an episode I particularly enjoyed on kind of early language development and like before kids learn words, having the influence of bilingualism or monolingualism and if they're going to be delayed. So anyway, for any of you guys who are parents of younger infants, there's great stuff there to check out for how it's related to education.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's great.
There really is. There's a lot that we can do, but that I've been these past few months, there have been so many emails coming in terms of like, what do I do with my child? How do I make sure that one, their social skills are not delayed if I have a 1 or 2 year old, young, older kids, how do I make sure that they're building the right skills so that they can start school, you know, in a year or two and have, and not be delayed in anything. And the answer always comes down to play. You know, if we play with them, story time, like Jamie, you said with your son, that ability to sit down and to listen and perhaps recount the story to you and remember what they were told and the details and to build on it, creativity, all that can be done, in a much simpler way than we imagined.
Well, something I also found, so when I told my son that we weren't going back to preschool, he was very upset. He loved it. Wow. He was looking forward to it. And that was another reason we decided to drop out, is because I didn't want to have to keep having that conversation with him. So I redid a back room to make it like a preschool for him. And he's got his art table and his science table and chalkboard and all of that. And I go, yeah, I made you your own private preschool. And turns out he didn't actually like the work. He liked the kids.
Yeah.
So that is that was something we had a problem with, is how do you make friends when you're not allowed to see people? And I finally took a creepy approach, and I wrote letters to people in the neighborhood I noticed had four-year-olds, and gave them my, I was like, hey, you might have seen me. My son's the redhead. You know, you can see him from a mile away.
I'm the one with the binoculars looking at your four-year-old child trying to figure out what age they are.
Exactly. And most of the moms, like, we'd interacted before. But I gave them our phone numbers, and I said, you know, if you want to do a outdoor play date, please let me know. And that was something that we ended up doing. Now we don't know what to do during the winter, but at least the kids in the neighborhood have been able to develop their own society, as it were. I think maybe Halloween was the last time it was actually warm enough to be outside and be together without it being completely nerve-wracking about, you know, who's sneezing on who.
Yeah.
So at some point, we're going to have to discuss the articles. The next one is Impact of COVID-19 and Lockdown on Mental Health of Children and Adolescents, a Narrative Review with Recommendations. This is from
Psychiatry Research. Yeah.
Thank you. Psychiatry Research. I'm on PubMed, and it's only showing me the four shortened journal pages or journal titles. Sorry about that. But this is from November 2020, Psychiatry Research, Singh et al. And this is talking about how kids are being affected. And they go into, this is the one I believe that goes into by age, right? So they say how young children are being infected, how young children are being impacted, how school and college age children are being impacted, and how special needs children are being impacted, how underprivileged children are impacted, and how being quarantined or separated from parents might be affecting children. And then they list advice from international organizations. So this was a very thorough paper. And the last one is, this is from the Journal of Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics, Applying Harm Reduction Principles to Address Screen Time in Young Children Amidst the COVID-19 Pandemic. And this is by Vanderloo et al. And harm reduction techniques are used usually for substance abuse or something similar to that. So they're treating screen time as almost a kind of addiction, and how can you get people to avoid the harm in those behaviors without forcing them to stop them completely? Because abstinence only, that doesn't always work very well either for addiction or any other any other field where you might
behavior.
Yeah, any other behavior. Mm-hmm. Saying just don't do that doesn't actually stop people from doing it. So they're
also, you're immoral. So yeah, remember that.
Oh yes, yeah.
Let's layer on the guilt.
Right. Don't do that, and you're a bad person if you do. That doesn't seem to work very well. Yeah. So they're saying, how can you mitigate the negative effects of screen time without guilting people or, you know, canceling your Wi-Fi service? Especially because you can't, at this point, how are we supposed to limit screen time when screens are the only way that we can see people?
Yes. And parents are working from home. How do you work your full day of work while you're home with for example, a 2-year-old?
Yeah, we call our TV the third parent.
Yeah.
But we just put it on PBS, if that makes it any better. So PBS is our third parent.
You know, I always tell parents, it's you don't have to have the guilt around it right now. It's not the time. Because how else are you supposed to work during the day? But there are ways, just like this article, you know, explains, there can be routines. There are ways to break it down, you know, spending a little bit of time before you start work during the day. So there are ways to kind of work with it, but you don't have to stop it, and you don't have to feel the guilt around it either, because you need to work.
Yeah, that was something I think followed for all of those articles, that there was the recommendation of establishing a routine. And I'm a sleep researcher. That's what we say in sleep research too. If you know, you have to establish a routine in order to sleep well or develop good sleep habits. So I imagine.
And not just sleep habits, right? I mean, the funny thing is that we're trying to say this, oh, you should develop routines, and that's important for children. But this is like all humans, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
like you could give the same advice to adults if you just put this in not a pediatric journal, and it would be equally useful. Like, don't use your device right before you sleep. Like, schedule your day so that you have some physical activity and some social interaction with people, and not just like sit in front of your screen. I mean, it's really funny if you read it through the lens, not mm-hmm. of pediatrics.
I know.
Because humans need schedules and kind of, yes. Well, not schedules, say routines and behaviors that are habits.
Yeah. Applying the harm reduction principles, I think they could have lopped out the in young children. I think you're absolutely right. You know, applying harm reduction principles to address screen time amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. Done.
yeah. Well, but it, you know, it, although I joke mostly, I mean, you talk about people being zoomed out or having Zoom fatigue or things like this, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's, you know, it kids are humans. And adults are also humans, right? So, and anyway, just, I did mean to interrupt, but mostly it's just a step back.
But you have a great point, because also, I mean, there are many ways that you can look at this. First of all, at the beginning of the pandemic, a lot of behavior was off the charts with kids, but it's because their routine changed. Everything was different. They weren't going to school at a certain time. You know, the breakfast, they thrive on these schedules and these routines. But also, we lost control of everything because our routine changed too. So it's a really great piece of advice for parents, because, you know, if we can reestablish new routines and new schedules with, you know, food, cooking, playtime, work time, everything, if you can schedule everything in, then you gain some sort of balance or control over everything. Again, the new kind of way of living.
So, yeah, although we're discussing in this episode about children, this is not just for children. Sorry, Jamie,
oh,
please
no.
continue.
I mean, I think we're going to have to just deal with interrupting each other, because there's no way to know. I guess there's this little hand raise button that we could do.
Is that a slap?
Shut up. No. My turn.
Oh, there it is.
I think it's supposed to say you have something to say, but if you guys are like me, you're probably looking at the article tabs while you're talking. So,
so I've got a question about screen time. So are we saying, I know we're saying like, let's worry less, a little bit less about it, because we've got plenty to worry about. But also, do we need to kind of adjust what our expectations are for what an appropriate amount of screen time is? Like if the kids are spending three times as much time on the screens, we're saying that that's fine, because that's how they're going to maybe be able to socialize. And that's like, we just have to change our paradigm on that.
So I think yes, to a certain extent. So right now, socializing, like Jamie said, with grandparents and family members is through Zoom and FaceTime. So it's I don't think we have to worry about that kind of screen time, because it is allowing children to be with family, you know, to continue socializing, to continue getting to know friends if you can have Zoom time with neighbors or friends. But the screen time that worries me the most is for children that are younger than two. Mm. And are, you know, perhaps at home with a parent who's working, and they need to be entertained. And there aren't many ways to entertain a very young child if you're not there. So the only way to kind of keep them entertained is screen. But again, we can't change the fact that we're working from home, but we can change what they're looking at. So if you do have, you know, access to YouTube, or you can see, you know, I don't know if you guys remember Mr. Dress Up and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. So I always suggest that we look for something that's a little slower for their brain, you know, and that they can watch these types of shows or family or home videos or something that is slow, rather than all of these fast paced movies or TV shows, because, you know, again, we have no choice but to place them in front of the TV if we have to work, but we can choose what they're watching.
Is that to help them learn how to focus, or what benefit does the slower content have?
It's not that it's a benefit, but it's just not as stimulating and overstimulating. Ah. You know, I usually ask parents to ask a child if they could repeat what they just saw in the past 10 minutes, if they're watching TV. And this is not research science backed, but if your child can't repeat what they just saw in the past 5 minutes, or who the character is or what happened, perhaps it's a little fast. There are a lot of fast-paced TV shows out there. And, you know, in our time, we watched a lot of TV. Some of us did, but we played outside a lot more. And the TV shows are much slower than they are today.
And it's funny because actually the industry has driven towards more content-rich. In the same way, like if you look at waveforms in music, everything is packed, right? So that if you put in a piece of silence, it's deafening silence, right? And you just have these you have these waveforms that just have so many layers to them because it's highly produced. All the even movies and stuff like that, kind of, it's taken the Mission Impossible angle where it's just from action scene to scene to scene to scene, and
yes,
and there's no downtime, and everything has kind of followed because, you know, it's stimulating and people like to feel stimulated. So, you know, but yeah, I've never thought about it in terms of stimulation for kids. Cause I think even like we've got a, we're over with our my parent-in-laws, and all the toys have so many sounds and lights.
Yes. Yeah.
And actually I just turned the sounds and lights off, and she Iris just loves standing up at the little table and mashing on the buttons and stuff. Like it doesn't need any sound. It doesn't need any sound or lights. She is having a gas and it doesn't enhance it. but she does like music. So anyway, but yeah, it's interesting to talk about it from like, it is too stimulating. That is, I didn't know that was a thing.
That's a question I've had about screen time for a while, is all of the advice seems to be based on limiting the exposure without defining what they mean by screen time. So like if my son is watching, like the only things he watches is either PBS, which is all educational, and there's not even commercials, which I didn't notice until he pointed out. He's like, there's no commercials on this channel. It's like, huh, that's great. Or he watches shows on Nick Jr. And each show on Nick Jr., before the show comes on, it tells you what your kid's going to like learn or be exposed to during that. So Blaze and the Monster Machines is one of our favorites. But Paw Patrol is one of the least educational ones on there, and that still teaches you about teamwork or something.
But kids seem to love Paw Patrol. I don't know, like we don't have a TV, but apparently like all the kids go crazy for Paw Patrol.
Because it's toys. Every episode is them making a new toy, and you can buy it for way too expensive. But
oh wow,
Nick Jr. still like says that they're teaching you stuff. But my point is like, so that's TV, but then he's got a tablet. On the tablet, there's like games you can play, and some of them are educational, like ABC Mouse or PBS Kids app. Some of them are not, and some of them are
like Counter-Strike and Fortnite,
right? Yeah. And and some of them are like YouTube and watching things where, you know, you can click from one video to another, sometimes with parental control, sometimes without. So what is, like, when they say screen time, do they mean having TV on at all? Do they mean really you have your personal screen, or do we still need to sort of figure out what makes quality screen time versus bad screen time?
No, it's a good point. So my wife is a neuroscientist and a pediatrician. And so when talking about the discussion of what is screen time, it's a really nebulous thing. And everyone has a different answer to it, because my wife's dad actually says, oh, well, actually, I'm a big fan of active kind of television, because it's like a whiteboard. You have content and you can interact with the content and discuss the content and things like that. Whereas Katie's sister, so my wife's sister and my wife are both of the opinion of like zero screen time, zero TV, zero. So it's, yeah, it's a big gray box that no one has an answer to.
It's true. I think from the American Association of Pediatrics, I think screen time for them is really like your phone, your tablet, your TV. However, they exclude FaceTime from their restrictions of 2 years old and under being zero screen time, because it's if you think back again to watching one of those episodes of Mr. Rogers, where you just the camera follows him, so you're not getting those flashes of light. You know, when somebody's watching TV at night and you look into their living room, well, not in a creepy way, but, you know, you see
the unless you're trying to see that they're watching TV.
Yeah. Want to be my friend?
I've noticed your screen time is limited.
Can I watch with you? Yeah. So, yeah, you see at night more of what it looks like, right? So those flashes of color, the flashes of light. So I think that's what they mean, and that's what they kind of warn us against. It's though seeing that very often for long periods of time at a young age, that could be overstimulating, versus FaceTime. It's just that one screen that you're staring at the person. The images aren't changing.
What about video games? I mean, if your kid's playing 6 hours a day of Fortnite with friends, I mean, that's social, right? That's socializing. It's collaborative.
You know, and I would say right now, again, going back to different rules and different life, it's if your child is you know, socializing with their friends and staying in touch with them through this, I personally don't see a problem.
You know, funny, Cameron, you should mention that, because remember a long time ago we did an episode on screen time in adolescence, and what they found was that actually zero screen time is you get a positive correlation with a certain amount of screen time, and then after a while, basically, like, it's bad for mental health. But they thought that it might have to do with that social aspect of, you know, being totally cut off socially from kind of your friend group who are all on devices is actually not necessarily a good thing. As with anything, it's all shades of gray.
Yeah, but my recollection of that article was that if people had very little screen time compared to their peers, they had worse mental health. And if they had excess screen time compared to their peers, they had worse mental health. It was bad at either extreme.
Just don't be different.
That's right.
Being different is bad for you. That's the long and the short of it.
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, it's easy to look at your kid. This is coming from a person who is neither a scientist nor a parent. It's easy to look at your kid, you know, playing Fortnite or Minecraft all day long and to feel like that's a big waste of time. But I don't know, it's social, it's collaborating, it's creative, it's a lot better than, you know, watching reality TV all day.
Well, no, and exactly, but it comes down to, it is a tool. What do you do with the tool? And it can, you know, like Katie's dad, like my wife's dad says, it is a whiteboard and you can do amazing things with it. But I think it really depends how you and the user kind of use that tool, right? Because there's many. I actually played a lot of video games when I was young, and I kind of asked my parents, like, "Oh man, like, why didn't you force me to do other things?" And they're like, "Well, you know, there are so many things. You could have been out drinking or doing." They're like, "You know, you were doing well in school. You were happy. You know, you were always fixing people's computers and like getting called into the school." Because so they're like, "You know, you kind of do your own thing, right?" And it wasn't harmful.
Well, that's funny. So, my parents said the same thing, because I watched tons of TV. And then when computers became something you could do, I would be on the computer while watching TV. And my mom said, like, I definitely got too much screen time all the time, way overstimulated. But my mom said she would let me watch TV because I would learn things from it. And that's not when they had educational programming. I was just watching cartoons. I still watch cartoons.
Carjack and...
I don't know. I don't know what kind of stuff, or if she was just making that up. But I've spent way too much time in my life watching uneducational cartoons. I am wearing a Ninja Turtles Christmas sweater at this moment. It's hard for me to see how... But it's totally different, you know? Like, I don't even know what Minecraft is. I know my nephews are into it, which, like, I hope they're not going to watch this episode because you're getting Minecraft toys for Christmas. It's going to be obvious. I have no idea what Minecraft is.
just give them some blocks. It'll be fine.
Sure.
Tell them it's diamond.
Yeah.
But you know what? It comes down to the bigger picture, though. It's not just about screen time. It's like you said, it's what else are you doing? Are you doing well in life? Or you know what I mean? Like as a teenager, are you doing well in school? Are you socializing? Do you have motivation? You know, are you, has anything changed in a negative way where you're no longer interested in something else? Or there's a lot to it. It's not just about the screen time. Yeah. With young kids under two, I would argue, you know, to be more mindful of it, because if you're having tantrums many, many times a day, you know, I've had some challenges with parents where we try to cut down on screen time and all of a sudden the tantrums disappear. Mm. So there is a certain aspect under two, but over two, there are so many benefits and there are ways to have schedules around it and make it a positive thing.
We had noticed a huge increase in tantrums with tablet time, and now like my son, he was 3 or 4, so not even under two, but when we limited it and set an alarm, the tantrums stopped. I mean, also I think he learned that when he has a tantrum, I take the tablet away and he doesn't get to see the tablet. But we had noticed that. And one question I have is, how do you get a 2-year-old to stare at a screen anyway? I've only had, they get up and and leave. Maybe I'm. My kids, generations of my family, we don't sit still. So maybe that's a personal problem, but I don't know how you, like, I would be baffled by a kid under two sitting down.
Well, let's talk about should we talk about physical activity then?
Let's do it, yeah.
Or is that a natural bridge?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, one of the things that we found, going out to the park and things like that, there was a whole bunch of benefits associated with that. But physical activity has been a really good way to add structure to our day, to say, okay, well, this is what we're doing, and we know that we're going to get like an hour-long walk in the park, and that's going to be a good chance to, you know, have a chance to talk things over, even, you know, not even just with Iris, because she can't talk. I mean, it's a nice chat to interact with her, although she would, you know, usually pass out. But it's this kind of scheduled physical activity, but that also, at least for us, led to kind of social activity as well.
I think something that was really difficult earlier on, they closed down the playground.
That seems crazy to me.
Yeah.
Same for us.
And they put ropes around it so you couldn't even get into the playground. And that was...
That's right.
I mean, they had bars open and they had playgrounds closed. It was insane. Yes.
Well, because kids are gross. Kids are really dirty. And I mean, yes, people at bars are gross and dirty too. But I see what they were trying to do.
I mean, they're basically the same. They both can't walk. They both throw up all over the place. They both kind of can't talk properly. It's basically the same.
Yeah. But that was the first time we actually had to have a conversation with my son about what was happening.
Yeah.
Because he actually cared about that. And then when they opened the playgrounds back up, that enabled us to not only get out and do some physical activity that isn't boring, because I take my son on walks all the time. It's not very fun for someone who's 3 to go just walking. But going to the playground and being able to socialize really helped with the mental health aspect.
And I mean, the socialization of children is also crazy, right? Because I mean, of all different ages, one of my friends, her daughter felt she was being punished because she couldn't see her friends. Mm-hmm. And it was really difficult to explain to her that, no, everyone else also has to stay at home. You've done nothing wrong. It's just that everyone else is sick. And we can't see anyone. And that it's very tough. Like all this stuff is intertwined, right? Like the physical and the social and the mental. That's why it's hard to kind of discuss it separately.
Right. And I mean, it's difficult when you have friends and you can't see them. My son was very close to making friendships at preschool, but not quite there yet. Like he would talk about these other kids, but we hadn't established, you know, we hadn't traded numbers. And then when they took that away, suddenly there was no way for him to make friends. And he was absolutely isolated. And that was where the mental health problems. Even though my son was 3 and newly 4, you know, we were going to have a birthday party and then this all hit. And I noticed early on that he was exhibiting a lot of mental health problems that I wouldn't have thought that a 4-year-old could really have. So moodiness, tantrums, and now that we're a year into it, it's nice to see that, well, it's not nice to see, but it's, I guess, reassuring that a lot of parents are reporting that their kids have been having mental health problems because of the isolation.
Was this covered by any of these articles, like an objective measure of what the pandemic is doing to kids?
Yes. So I think all of them briefly mention how it is having negative effect on their physical and mental health. So
as in just like bigger obesity rates or whatever, kids are stuck at home and things like that, or?
Yeah. So, some of it is, like a review of previous literature, and I'm trying to find which one of these has a table that goes through all the different measures and how they did it. Okay. So this is Impact of COVID-19 and Lockdown on Mental Health of Children and Adolescents, a narrative review with recommendations. Table 1 discusses the articles on mental health and psychosocial aspects of COVID among children and adolescents from other papers. Thematic areas are school closures, mental health, impact on young people with mental health needs. And a lot of these seem to be survey items. So they would send a survey out and have people respond.
And it's been kind of an interesting thing because it's very hard to get people in for studies during the COVID period. And so my sister-in-law has also been running surveys, mostly regarding touch and the influence of touch on mental health and well-being. But yeah, if everyone is locked down and you can't actually have people in, you send out a survey, right?
Mm-hmm. My area of expertise is actigraphy and wearables. So we've been having a lot of conversations in this past year about how this has been coming, that wearables are becoming part of our health strategy. But I think this past year has really launched that even further, how these personal devices can be improved and be incorporated into telehealth. And children's wearables are on that list.
We're talking about like Apple Watches and stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. So Fitbit is probably the most common that maybe Western populations might be aware of. Amazfit, I think, might be China's like forerunner. But then sleep researchers have been using the technology that's in a Fitbit or these new sleep tracking wearables. We've been using it since the 80s. So this is it, and it's crazy how much has been improved in the past 3 years or so with all these additional sensors. And it's getting to the point where this is going beyond what traditional actigraphy was. And actigraphy is measuring movement on your wrist. So you can use that to estimate how much somebody is moving every day, how many steps they're taking, but you can also use it to determine when they're falling asleep. And now that these new wearables have in heart rate and oxygen sensing and the ability to complete a self-report, we're poised to launch into a new era of being able to measure things remotely without having to actually see patients or subjects if you're running a research study. Survey is still wildly important. There's no way to measure how someone feels except asking them. I used to do pain research, and then we would hurt people and see how it felt.
Painful, I would guess.
Yeah. But you need to ask someone how they feel. That's really important.
And these wearables with children, is this something that is being recommended to monitor their fitness and their heart rate and their activity?
Well, certainly
levels?
The people selling the devices are recommending that. That's not my area of expertise, so I'm not sure how much, but certainly you know, if parents need help and there's limited person-to-person capabilities for you to get help, mm-hmm. maybe having a wearable or having an app that, you know, monitors your kid and helps you monitor your kid while you're working would be helpful. I could see the merit in that. I could also see it just being a hassle. But yeah, they've got wearables and apps to do a whole bunch of stuff. So I could see it's possible that you could have a child's app that, you know, buzzes if they've been sitting too long or is mm-hmm. linked to their tablet and, I don't know, like warns you that they've been on their tablet too long. That's mm-hmm. not my area, but if there's any,
it's just an interesting, yeah. Because like you said, parents are working right. during the day. So, you know, anything that can help them to remind them or remind their child, okay, time to move around a little bit or, you know, time to get off the iPad for a few minutes. could
a
be
lot
helpful.
Of these articles and a lot of the problems that are affecting these kids, the advice at the end seems to be parents have to guide the children and parents need support. But mm-hmm. it's very limited how we can get support right now. You might have been able to rely on your family or your community center or your church or your school or even, you know, like a program that you pay for, a camp or something. And those aren't options that are viable right now. And even when they are, mm-hmm. they might be anxiety producing, not want to send your kid to an in-person learning environment because of the mm-hmm. stress of what that means. Or, I mean, one thing that's very stressful for us is you have to watch your kids to make sure that they're not, you know, sneezing on each other or taking their masks mm-hmm. off or fingers in their mouth. And that's stressful for parents, but I imagine it's stressful for the kid being so closely monitored all the time as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Mm-hmm. Like, is there a danger of too much helicopter parenting as a result of just being around your kid all day? I mean, maybe that's worse for like older kids where maybe they're not getting the autonomy that they need.
Yeah, the first part that Jamie just mentioned, just I wanted to address that that you said in terms of, let's say, washing your hands all the time or being careful not to take your mask off. I had just interviewed two psychologists that we spoke about, you know, perhaps some kids developing anxiety around that. Did I wash my hands enough? Is the germ around me? So this is something that has triggered some higher anxiety levels in kids. And they spoke about routine, which we mentioned before, and it comes back to that. So if you have a sort of chart, if you have a young child and you draw out, okay, when we get home, we wash our hands, and not placing more pressure than that, but just saying, this is our new routine when we get home. You wash your hands when you walk in and you come back from the park. Or we leave the house and we grab our mask to make sure that we have it with us. We put it on and just staying, not like you said, like you don't want to helicopter too much and you don't want to show your anxiety if you have one, because like we all know we might have that as well, worrying that, you know, they catch it, but to try to keep it as neutral as possible and just in the form of a routine or a schedule. But then being around our kids, yes, there's always the chance of developing more of that helicopter parenting.
Right. Or, I mean, the potential for mistreatment, or if you're around your kids too much, spoiler alert, they get annoying.
And that's the biggest thing right now.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, not just kids, right? Like you see all these kind of reports as well that you basically have a binomial distribution. You spend a lot of time with your family or you're just in close contact with people for a long time. It may not be the most healthy relationship with a lot of these cases, right? So
yeah, and Michael, you're living with your in-laws right now. Is that correct?
I love it. I think it's great, but
blink twice. Yeah, are you safe?
Well, yeah, no, but well, it's I mean, this was kind of something that we both was important to us from the get-go. Is our in-laws, not only do we like our in-laws, but we also, our in-laws enjoy each other, which is dangerous because you don't want them to get along too well, because then so, but yeah, it's yeah, but we're very fortunate, right? You're in really close proximity all day, every day for several months. Like, you know, the saying is that fish are like family. They kind of, you know, go bad after a few days, but, or family are like fish, I guess. but yeah, like, and it's the same, you know, if your kids are intense little humans and so, you know, that you not everyone likes that intensity all the time, right?
And I think it's important for us to bring up that article, the Italian one, right, where they're talking about parental burnout, because, you know, a lot of parents right now are feeling burnt out because they haven't had that break since March, when I don't know when we went into lockdown, mid-March. You know, I've been with my three kids, you know, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. My baby, my son still wakes up 3 to 4 times a night. And then the other two wake up once or twice. So it's been quite
yeah, direct. And that relates to our last podcast where we were talking about the stress on parents and distribution of parenting responsibilities. That really makes the difference. Now I'm trying to see one of these articles put out a survey to see how much people were hurt or how much that, you know, this is impacting them. So let me see. I think it was
the Italian one.
Yes, but which one is the Italian one?
Oh, it was Journal of Pediatric Psychology.
Yeah, the impact on
impact of COVID. Yeah, so towards the bottom, mm-hmm. they said that mostly mothers filled out the questionnaire. And that brings up a whole other layer to this. So if you have another parent in the house, that's at least two people. But then, you know, Cindy, you've got three kids. You're outnumbered, even if you've got two people.
Yeah. Yeah. We're always. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's. And sometimes one of the parents doesn't do very much work. So. It's yeah. It could just be another person to have to take care of.
And then you get resentment, and then you get,
That, you know, that's, again, I'm lucky because I get to communicate with a lot of parents online who reach out to me, and this is the biggest problem. So if you're a mom, you're still working from home, but you have a child, and I think that's what the Italian study mm-hmm. said, that the higher risk for burnout are the working moms who have children between the ages of 0 and 5 because of their roles, and especially if the father is working outside of the home. But yeah, I think it's important that, you know, parents sit down and kind of talk about this, because it is a hefty load to carry for a parent or a mom if they're working from home during the day and trying to keep young kids active and busy. And I have a friend who, you know, it's 9 to 5 and her boss expects things to come in at a certain mm-hmm. time, but she has a 3-year-old at home. How do you keep them entertained when they're like, mommy, mommy, mommy? And your boss says you have 5 minutes to send in this document, and there's no, they don't give them
flexibility,
give them a bit of slack. Yeah, exactly. So there's that added that anxiety, that stress. And then that stress trickles down onto your kids because you're yelling at them more. You're yelling a lot more than you used to. You're stressed out. So what's happening to the kids? Well, they're going to feel anxious as well.
But we do know some people who have to work and take care of their kids at the same time. And you just have two jobs. Taking care of kids mm-hmm. is a job. It might mm-hmm. not be a 9-to-5 job. It might not be a job where you're being compensated for your time, but it is
with money
or with anything else, with gratitude, with eventual grandchildren. Like, you know, you can raise kids and never get the credit you're due. But especially now, you know, I think a lot of people thought they could start working from home or start doing this themselves. And it's important to treat this like it is a job, and it requires support. It requires time. It requires dedication.
Yeah. And everything we've talked about, you know, like to help the kids out, it's all just more time, right? More time mm-hmm. monitoring their screen time, more time, you know, taking them on walks or taking them to the park, more time reading to them and or teaching them.
Yeah. Some of the worst advice they gave was, first of all, that you watch them do screen time.
Yeah.
It's like, that's no that's, thank you.
But the point of screen time is to not have to watch them.
Exactly. But another thing they suggested was to be a good role model and limit my screen time, which I also don't want to do. You know, it's like, are you telling me that I should get off my phone or my computer, or I should watch less TV?
And that's the hard part now, right? We're being told to have these boundaries, but the bound, what these, the screen time for you is your break, is your time to disconnect. Especially when we're home with our kids all the time and there isn't time to disconnect. But it, part of it, as hard as it is to hear sometimes, giving a little bit, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to cut, we don't have to cut everything out, but just showing them that we have placed some boundaries could help them a little bit, but it's not easy.
No, especially like Michael was saying, you get sick of the people that you live with. And some now that we can't go anywhere, it's one of the few ways to sort of tune them out.
You know, I recently had this conversation with Dr. Susan King, who's a researcher at McGill University, and she's been studying natural disasters for the past 12 years, I think, or 15 years. And what they were looking at pregnant mothers. So it's kind of a segue, but just the point is they looked at stress and they were able to see that the stress of an event, so let's say now in the pandemic itself and people have lost their jobs and, you know, we're home with our kids, we're managing a workload that's very heavy. The stressors themselves had less of an importance than how we perceive the stress.
Oh, well, that sounds reasonable, yeah.
And I know that I want to end the episode or our chat on a positive note for some parents, because, you know, it is hard for many of us and there isn't an outcome and nothing will change tomorrow. So how about we work together to try to perceive little things as less stressful, you know, just for ourselves, because there isn't an end to this. We're not, this is not ending in a week or a month. It scares me because we are all burnt out and exhausted. And if we don't see an end to it, how do we get out of this mentally, right? How do we help ourselves?
But we do need to figure out as parents where the resources are now that our old resources have been disrupted.
We all need a Jamie's mom in our life.
Oh, yeah. Geez.
I think about that all the time.
Don't let her hear you. Yeah. She will be at your door, Cameron.
I think about all the time what an enormous privilege it is to have great parents, and how much easier my life has been made by that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's social and economic resources, right? And that's a lot of these things, whether it's about screen time or anything else, about, you know, giving your child more attention or things like that, comes down to social and economic resources and being able to provide those. Because if, you know, in an ideal world, if you have unlimited resources, you would have one-on-one, you know, parenting, be that with yourself, with your kids, or if you didn't enjoy that, maybe with someone else so that you could be doing other things. But it all comes down to the ability to be able to A, not work, or B, have someone else who is not working to be able to provide that resource. In this case, say like attentive parenting or attentive childminding. And it is tough because all of these things are more asks of, in terms of, oh, well, you need to establish routines. Oh, well, that assumes that you have, you know, time that can be given at those times and that these things come up, right? So it is, whether it's pandemic or otherwise, a lot of these things come down to resources, I feel.
Well, I think it's important for us to make the distinction that social and economic resources are not what makes a good parent.
yeah, fair.
But limitations to your social and economic resources. So whether you have an extended family or you can work from home or you have enough money to buy the things that your kids need, those things make it easier for you to achieve good parenting. And those are barriers that a lot of parents are facing right now.
Yeah.
That was in impact of COVID-19, the Italian impact of COVID-19 and lockdown on mental health of children and adolescents. They did mention how this is impacting underprivileged kids and kids with special needs more so just your average 4-year-old. We need better support that isn't related to your social or economic status, because those are the parents who are experiencing a way worse situation.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good way to also discuss or bring in education, because some of these articles that I was reading just are talking about the fact that this is going to create a larger gap now in with kids in terms of their level of education. Even let's say if your child is in K to 12, so anywhere, you know, in that range, when school just stopped, nothing had been prepared. Nothing, teachers were not prepared to teach online full time. And it was, it's an assumption that every child will have properly functioning internet in their home to Zoom with their teachers. And these, you know, unfortunately, these are the kids that are not going to be receiving the same level of education as other children.
You know, it's not always as simple as a list of recommendations make it seem.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that it's, you know, that's a specific example, but it's much more widespread as well. Because Katie, one of the big, so my wife's a pediatrician, and even in the UK, as soon as they found that as soon as you remove children from school is a controlled and generally safe environment. And for a lot of kids, you are then taking them out of a safe environment where they're going to have, in some of these cases, at least one warm meal a day, and you're putting them in environments that are unsafe.
Yeah.
And so that, like you said, Jamie, I mean, the more vulnerable you are, the worse it is going to exacerbate any existing problems. Exactly. And some of the people who are the most vulnerable are going to be left out. And it's you know, it's nice that in some number of cases, you have people who are willing to take extraordinary efforts to try and help some of these people. And, you know, people do try to step up where possible, but there's so many cases that just go that just go by the wayside because it happens a lot more than many of us are kind of aware of.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, a lot of the articles here, their suggestion at the end is that parents ultimately, you know, the child benefits when there's proper parenting, but that parents need resources from outside. I think one of the articles said they need to have like interaction. This is probably the same one where it's follows up with recommendations. They say we need collaboration between parents, teachers, pediatricians, government, and like nonprofit organizations. So if one thing you can't do is you can't parent someone else's kids, they get really mad when you do that. But if we are parents, we can support other parents and concentrate on, well, what kinds of actions could I take or causes that I can support? How can that help other people? And how might my parenting situation be different? And for non-parents, I think this is actually eye-opening to a lot of inequalities the pandemic has been, and parenting being a bit of a burden is one of those things. And so for people with no kids, maybe think about how you can support parents as well. I mean, across the board, we have to keep having children, or what's the, you know, who are you going to give your stuff to? if there's no kids, like, what? Dogs are going to inherit the earth.
Well, that's not that's I'm starting to like the sound of that, actually.
Yeah, well, I think that is the premise of Paw Patrol.
Oh,
it's post-apocalyptic.
That's like also it. The premise of Cars, that the cars inherit the earth. Well, I think we better wrap things up.
Well, Jamie, thanks again for sharing everything, not just the blades, but also, you know, like the scientific content. And Cindy, thanks again for coming on and sharing a lot of the great work that you've been doing as well. It's been really great having everyone on board here. It's been a really great discussion.
And thank you, listener, for listening to our show. You can follow us, Useful Sci on Twitter and at Useful Science on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook if you search for us. You can sign up for our newsletter on our website. And you can reach us by email at podcast@usefulscience.org. And if you have any questions for any of us or questions for Cindy, we can pass that along to her. My name is Cameron Spencer. You can find my work online at lab43.com.
I'm JMK Devine. You can follow me on Twitter at JK_Devine.
My name is Michael Galtis. You can follow me at Kaboom Science.
And I'm Cindy Hovington. You could follow me at Kiris_neuron or find us at kirisneuron.com to listen to our podcast or read our blog posts.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a very useful week.